The idea of letting go are, of course, what it's called formally in Buddhism, renunciation, which is a word that most people find uncomfortable. Nobody even likes to hear that word, renunciation. So modern Buddhists like to refer to it as letting go, which sounds nicer. And then, of course, modern spiritual magazines call it simplifying. Simplify your life. It gets nicer and nicer. Renunciation sounds like, oh, my God, somebody wants to take away all my shit. Simplifying is like, oh, yeah, I like that idea. I want my life to be simpler. So either way you want to put it, renunciation, letting go, simplifying, whatever term you have, it does require a lot of choices that are important. It starts by being really clear-headed on our limitations. We all only have so much time in life. We don't know how much time we're going to have, but we only have a certain amount of time. And on top of that, we only have so much effort. And then on top of that, we only have so much attention span. Some of us have no attention spans. But as you get older, even if you have time and a willingness, sometimes it becomes harder and harder to focus, or even when we're young. I have to say that as I've gotten older, each new generation of remote controls becomes increasingly difficult for me to master. When I was a kid, it was effortless. My parents would be confused, and I'd grab the remote control and, you know, show them how to use the TV, but now, with each new thing I have to buy, everything comes with a little remote control, and I can't be bothered half the time to figure it out because I only have so much attention that I can give. So there's the effort, the energy that goes into it, the attention span, just how much time we have. And often in life, we accumulate more responsibilities, stories, things we have to keep track of, stuff in our life, then we can usefully follow through with, give it its justice. And sometimes we're carrying around things that we have no control over whatsoever. But we carry around and we worry about them, even though there's nothing that our worrying or our thinking can accomplish. The proper way to, in Yonisa Manasikara, the Buddhist teachings on appropriate attention, is to review all of the content in our minds, all of our thoughts, all the stories, everything that's going on in there, in terms of how useful is it, in terms of if I give my energy and attention to an idea, to a project, to something that I'm carrying around, a thought, a story. If I compare how much time and energy and attention I give it, and then see what the long-term results are, how worthwhile is it? Some things, we put a lot of effort and energy, but they give very short-term results. If you live in nearby my neighborhood and you watch the junkies running around trying to score and cop each day, there's a lot of effort that goes into that. You know, who's he? I know this guy. Oh, I don't know that guy. You know, where's the dealer? Has he got good stuff? And there's an enormous amount of effort and energy, but the payoff is a few hours long, and then they're back to the drawing board. On the other hand, there's certain things that do also take time and effort, like working out in the gym, but the results are more lasting and they're not harmful. There's no negative long-term results of meditation or doing exercise that you're physically capable of or being generous with your time. So there's lots of things that do pay off in the long term that are worthwhile paying attention to. For instance, when we're at our work, or when we're in a relationship or a friendship and we're talking, giving our attention to what we're doing, listening to what another person's going through, sharing, empathizing, being compassionate. These are all practices that might not be easy, but they do pay off. They build up self-esteem. And in the long term, the mind is a much more comfortable place to live in if we practice these things. On the other hand, if we practice being judgmental or carrying around resentments, there's a whole bunch of thoughts I'll list, that if we give our attention to those things, then in the future, in the long-term results for our minds are not healthy. As neuroscientists say, neurons that fire together wire together. Whatever thoughts we think today, we increase the likelihood that we'll think those thoughts in the future. Whatever moods and whatever things that we avoid, that we get all stressed out about, everything we do with our mind hardwires it. It's called neuroplasticity, if you want to look it up. But basically, the way we use the mind creates the mind we'll live in the future. The Buddha called this karma. He said every action, every thought is like a seed that we're dropping. And any of those seeds that we're planting in the mind in the future could sprout. Not necessarily everything you do will cause a future mind state, just like every seed a gardener, and whenever I talk about gardening as a metaphor, I should be shot, because I really have no idea what I'm talking about. But, well, not shot, let's just say I should be reprimanded. But dropping seeds in, not every seed will flourish, come to fruition. You get the idea. So the way you use your mind could very well create the mind state you live in the future. And then on top of that, the Buddha said the very last thought you have, if you believe in rebirth, shapes or helps determine in a very big way what next life you're going to have, the quality of your next life. And since we don't know what's going to be our last thought, we should be very careful with the way we use our mind, because this could be the last thought for every one of us, and ask ourselves, would we want this thought I'm having right now to be the very last thought I'm having? So, I've been watching guiltily. You know, you have shows that you're proud of watching because they're terrific. Like, I love Breaking Bad, and I really do. It's a great show. But there's another show I watch. It's on that channel that does the shows about interventions and stuff like that. It's called Hoarders. It's a show by the same, I think it must be the same people that do The Intervention. It's a show where they go into hoarders' apartments and houses where they pack them in, back in with all this garbage and rotting food and magazines that are, you know, decades old, and electronic equipment that has long since died, and stuff that's fallen apart. And people hoard this stuff. And it becomes so that you can't move around in their place. And, you know, literally in the show, like, the people who go in to help the hoarders are gagging and vomiting in their mouth because it smells so bad. And it's really amazing that people can allow their where they live to become like the way hoarders do. It's obviously a form of dysmorphia where people really don't see what's really happening. But when they help, the second part of every show, just like on Intervention, the first part is how bad is it? And you have to sit, wade through a half an hour of just really gross footage. And then the second half is how they try to help these hoarders throw away stuff. And this requires two kinds of people. The first is an organizer. If there's any one job I would not want to have, it's got to be a fucking organizer. The idea of walking into a hoarder's apartment and trying to you know, help a hoarder out is just beyond me. But they go in, and they're invariably women in their 50s wearing pantsuits with, you know, looking very well put together, and a little, you know, pin and the Hillary Clinton hair, and they're all very, you know, excited about helping people organize. And the big thing that they do is they say to people, you know, is this thing really important? Are you going to really wear this piece of clothing that you had when you were six in the next year. Now you're a size 10, 50-year-old woman. Do you really need your pajamas from when you were six? And invariably they'll say, well, I might need it, or it's, something that I'm very attached with. And then the second person they have to help the hoarders are the therapists. Thank God they bring in the therapists, the social workers, they bring in the therapists and social workers, and they come in there and they say, how are you feeling right now? Which is, the answer is going to be shitty. I'm not feeling very good. I'm throwing away all this shit that I'm obviously very attached to for a reason nobody can tell, but these people are filming me throwing away all my garbage. Nobody's going to say, oh, I love this moment of my life. This is thrilling. I'm being exposed to the world as a hoarder, and the stuff that I'm hoarding is now being, I'm being humiliated and shamed for it. But anyway, the therapists help them out, and they say, how do you feel? Can you breathe? Can you relax? Do we need to take this slower? Do you need to take a break? Why do you feel this huge attachment to this thing that's going to be of no use? So I was obviously feeling the need to justify watching this show, so I thought I'd bombard you with... Now, the reason why I was thinking about this show, and it's very similar to techniques that the Buddha talked about, how to go through our minds and look at the thoughts and stories that we carry around in our lives, the responsibilities that we accumulate, and see, is all this stuff really necessary? Am I carrying around a whole lot of really useful stuff that I can be effective with? Am I really going to wear this thought usefully in the future? Or is this something that I'm worrying about that is not going to be useful in creating lasting peace of mind in the future? Now, Buddha in his Upadana Sutta said there's four different kinds of things that we carry around or attach to that cause us unnecessary suffering. Everything we carry around in our mind, even the things we like to think about, requires what the Buddha called kriya, or mental energy. And neuroscience justifies this. Everything we think about requires the expenditure of dopamine, requires neurally wiring the brain so that these memories or thoughts stick, and it requires constantly opening up these memories, rewiring them, and then refiling them. That's partially what we do in our dreams as well, neurally rewiring the brain so that we can maintain long-term projects, memories, stories, thoughts. So everything we carry around in our mind requires mental energy, takes up storage space in the temporal lobe, and leaves less time and energy to do something else. So it's worthwhile occasionally doing a spring cleaning of the brain. While we're upping the RAM with our meditation, we're also going to clean out those hard drives and mix as many metaphors as we possibly can in a single sentence. So, what are those four types of things that we attach to or carry around that are largely causes of stress and suffering? Well, the first, the Buddha said, is we carry around stories about the things that we like or the things that we think will bring us lasting happiness. And invariably, it's our stuff. We like to think about our stuff, our friends, our relationships, all those external things that we think can bring us lasting happiness. We like to carry around those things. We like to think about them. I like to think about my stuff. We all like to get more stuff. Some people like to sit on the internet late at night. I have a friend who does this and constantly buys things on eBay that he doesn't need, because just the expenditure of dopamine and the whole reward neurotransmitters feels good, thinking about getting more stuff that he doesn't need. So that's one thing that we carry around. Just all those things that we really like, that we attach to, that we think really fill our lives up. And there's certain things that we don't want to give up, and that's fine. I personally love, I have a bunch of banjos. I pare it down because there was only so much I could keep track of and feel good about. I love, I have my soccer team. If you don't like soccer, that's fine. Don't worry about it. But I have my favorite soccer team, and I, every couple of days, oh, well, every day practically, I open up and see if they've, what's happening with my soccer team. All this stuff takes energy, takes time, takes an expenditure. Some people have hobbies with cars or motorcycles, or they like to paint, or they like to write a book, or they want to. All the hobbies, everything that we do that brings us pleasure requires effort. Some of this effort is worthwhile. If it brings us long-term lasting peace of mind or sense of esteem to paint or to surf or to collect track bikes, I don't know, then that's fine. But a lot of the things that we keep track of don't bring true lasting value. Secondly, in the Buddha's list, there is our views and opinions about the world. There ought to be a law. This is the way that it should be. I can't believe that this is allowed. All that stuff that we carried around, our little secret, little view of the way that the world should run, when we carry this around and it intrudes on other parts of our lives and we should be focusing on something else, then we are carrying it around far too much. Just having views and opinions is one thing. We all will have them. But when we start tugging them around, and when inadvertently we sit with somebody whose views and opinions are not our own, and then we start suffering, or we start finding ourselves immediately jumping into these views and opinions when there's something else that we could be focusing and accomplishing on, that's what the Buddha called upadana. It's attachment that's causing stress. The third form is our responsibilities, and we all accumulate them. It could start with things we really like or love, like children or pets or plants or whatever. But then it generally goes on and we think, well, I've got a responsibility to this person and that group and this thing at work. And generally then these responsibilities spiral out to a lot of things that really aren't our responsibility, but still we think we have to think about it. For example, very often at work I'll hear people say, well, I wonder if this person's going to do what they should. Well, that's really none of your business. Frankly, they either are going to do it or they don't, but it's not your job. You can't control them. And if they don't do it, well, then they're going to have to live with that responsibility, and then we'll have to decide what we do then. But worrying about what might happen with somebody else is not our responsibility. It's just a waste of mental time. It's a form of dukkha, stress, unnecessary mental effort. If we look through all the responsibilities and things we have to keep track of, very often we'll see that there are a lot of things in there that are beyond our control, that we have absolutely no way to in any way have any role in determining the result. But still we carry around these stories. It's very interesting. There was a wonderful clinical study where these psychologists went through a series of buildings, and they interviewed all the people that worked in the buildings, because there was all these fascinating different companies. There were internet startups, engineering firms, advertising agencies, all the modern service industries you could imagine. They went through these buildings and they interviewed everybody that worked in the building because they wanted to find out who had the highest level of baseline happiness. Who were the happiest people that worked in these buildings? The answer was the janitors. This caught people, the researchers, off guard. they thought it would surely be the either somebody who had a lot of power and made a lot of money, or somebody who was the most creative. But they found that the key to happiness was a job where somebody felt they had limited responsibilities that they could control and do well, and were not being expected to keep track of something that they could not control. Very often, creative jobs, it turned out, not only had the creative element, but all these expectations on top of it, that they would be keeping track of things that were completely beyond their control, or decisions that other people were going to be making. They found out that the two keys to finding happiness in a job were having some lasting good control or input, but B, not accumulating too many responsibilities or obligations so that the person felt that they couldn't do or give the necessary attention to each. So they again did the exact same different same baseline happiness test again, this time not in any specific buildings, just to the population at large. And again, they found that the janitors wound up generally at the very top of the baseline happiness index. So there's something to learn about this. The constant search for the what the Buddha called the worldly winds of acclaim, having lots of friends on Facebook, living that virtual life, accumulating even experiences, which was very big when I was growing up. Everybody said, I want to have life experiences. And I always thought that life was an experience, but apparently a life experience is something that involves traveling to some place that's extremely exotic, sleeping with another backpacker, coming back, and then talking about it endlessly over a cup of coffee. And these things have their purpose, but in terms of when they do other clinical studies, all available in this wonderful book I've been reading on clinical psychology, they talk about how it turns out that the things that people remember the longest and feel good about the longest are actually times when they were generous with other people, when they did something that helped somebody out. Simply traveling, or simply just for the sake of traveling, didn't build up self-esteem unless the traveling was for a larger purpose. Then they found that there was a big payoff. So it was always, does this action benefit people, and is it something that is a meaningful amount of things that I have to keep control of? So to go back quickly to the hoarder thing, when we go through our thoughts, we need to have those two experts in our minds. We need to have the organizer. We need to have that voice that says, is this thought that I'm thinking, is this something that I'm going to usefully be participating in and is going to give me a good result or bring me some form of lasting happiness? Or is this something that I'm thinking about that actually has no possibility of bringing any worthwhile action into my life? Is this going to pay off, or am I wasting my mind thinking about this stuff? It's really, really useful to go through and really challenge ourselves when the mind says, oh yeah, I've gotta think about what that person's doing or what this person's thinking about me and such not. Well, I ask it why. Generally, if I come up with a because very quickly after I ask why, it's an indication that I'm thinking about something that doesn't have a lot of real justification. It's really helpful to look at the underlying reasonings or justifications behind the way I use my mind. To ask myself, what's the real motivation here? Is there really some chance of being useful and beneficial for myself or others? Or am I simply trying to get back or accumulate power or control or make as many people like me as possible? Because those are not worthwhile endeavors. They won't bring lasting peace. Simply accomplishing a lot of friends or get accumulating power, these do not bring anything lasting that's worthwhile. At the same time, we need that organizer, that voice challenging us. We also need to have our inner therapist taking care of ourselves, asking ourselves, okay, are we relaxing ourselves? Are we breathing? Are we, you know, making sure the body is comfortable? Are we getting tight while we're doing this? We should never turn an internal inventory into a stressful thing. The reason why we're doing all this is so that we can be happy. So it's counterproductive to turn the entire process of reviewing what's in my mind into a stressful endeavor. That's why we need to have part of our mind keeping track of, is my body relaxed? Is that area, I call it the canary in the mine shaft. There's always one place in my body that gets really tight when I'm beginning to get stressed out. In my case, it's my abdomen gets really tight, so my shoulders also go up. But everybody carries their stress in a different place. Some people, they get really tight in their throat, or their chest gets tight, or whatever. Their jaw locks, their brows get really tight. Get to know how your body is letting you know that you're pushing your, bringing stress, or what the Buddha called vedana, you're resisting something. And before you push through, try to relax, breathe, keep the body as comfortable as possible, so that we don't associate letting go and simplifying the mind with something that's stressful. It's very important to have that compassionate voice mixed in with the wisdom voice. All the Buddhist teachings boil down to wisdom and compassion. So we always have to have the two together. Finally, I'll conclude by saying that the term letting go or simplifying is a bit misleading. Because I'll give you a great analogy, a story that I just love. There was this story of this Buddhist nun in, I believe it was Thailand, and she was visited by these businessmen. And this nun gave all of her life to helping others, to working with orphans, to going to hospitals, to doing service. And these businessmen came to give her monastery a donation, and one businessman said to her, "I just want to say how grateful we are to all the things you've given up so that you can be of service." And the nun replied, "I haven't given up anything. I've filled up my life with happiness. It's you who've given up happiness. With all that stuff you're worrying about, to accumulate money, to accumulate power, to run your businesses, to make sure that your kids wind up in the right school and, you know, keep track of all these different stories, all these things you've attached to have brought stress into your life. My life doesn't have any." So when we let go of unnecessary things, we're not doing with less, we're actually getting more, much more, because we're able to focus the mind on things that really do bring us happiness. For example, just thinking of ways we can appreciate all the skillful things we've done, focus on the ways we can be helpful to ourselves and others in the future in really beneficial ways. We can focus on developing true peace in our lives through not only practicing, but just being mindful and constantly making sure that we're not taking on too much. There's so many ways we can bring true lasting joy and happiness in our lives, but it starts out by dropping some of the stuff that doesn't bring us lasting peace. We clean out so that we can have a fuller, happier life. So I thank you all for listening. I hope that there was something